It was argued in the Superior Court in Anchorage, and Judge Acapeni ruled that the trade violated the Alaska Constitution. I think Judge Acapeni was dead wrong. We are appealing the case to the Alaska Supreme Court, and I think it's going to be reversed there. At least I hope it's going to be reversed there.
After all, there's precedent for that. I believe Judge Acapeni was ruled wrong in regard to a Warwick-type appointment.
Yeah.
You don't want to open that question again tonight, do you?
No, not with Andy.
Okay. Does the Hall Road to commercial... Does opening the Hall Road to commercial use permit tour bus operation? Got that one out.
Well, initially, again, that would be a determination of the users and the type of fees that will be charged. And again, in the wake of reassessment, annual reassessment, that type of operation may and probably will be permitted. Initially, it would not under the first terms. Incidentally, regarding the Hall Road, I had made mention of the fact that I was inclined to open it on a conservative basis initially. And I mentioned when we were dedicating local bike trail that perhaps I should have opened it only to bicycles. I thought I was being facetious, but somebody came boiling up to me in Anchorage Westward Hotel and said, "What's this idiocy about you opening the Hall Road only to bikes?" So we have expanded beyond that usage, I will say.
Well, that was one of the questions we were going to ask you later, perhaps, was your philosophy of the Hall Road, and you've just answered that one. Is that right, Governor Hammond?
No comment.
You're watching Town Forum. Phone number is 479-7491. If you would like to talk to Governor Hammond or one of the members of his cabinet here tonight, please call that phone number and speak directly to them or leave a question. And let's get right on to the next question. Well, it's not exactly phrased as a question here, but I think they want to know why white Alaskan natives are not entitled to land claim. You can read that,
because
too.
Because Congress chose to exclude them from the land bill. It's as simple as that. I don't know whether any one of my commissioners wish to tackle that further, but...
Well, Governor, it's white
Alaska. Well, I presume they mean persons born in Alaska.
Non-natives who are here. I'd just say this, Governor. I was there as a legislative assistant to Nick Begich when the bill was passed, and I think the answer is... It's a difficult question because there's a certain amount of equity that says that there should be a settlement for non-native persons who were born here. But the truth is that Aboriginal land claims, which are land claims that were held by natives here and elsewhere, are recognized in the law in a very special way. And that same recognition just has never extended.
And I compliment your effort to bring state government to the people. Your rating will rise far above national programs if continued. This forum will make citizens realize that communications with their state administration is possible and can resolve many problems that do not need to exist. I compliment you for your effort and communications.
Thank you very much, Stan. Appreciate that.
Feels good when it's as hot as it is up here, doesn't it? Please call if you have questions, compliments, statements to make, 479-7491 to Town Forum. And why is your administration required to buy back the Cashamack oil lease? Mr. Gross is getting ready again.
Well, I'd be happy to take that one on and then lob it over to Ab. I find, much to my surprise, that virtually no one seems to be aware of the fact, or very few seem to be aware of the fact, that the Supreme Court ruled unanimously that the leases in Cashamack Bay were illegally conveyed. Two of the justices concluded that we should give the money back, should be compelled to give the money back, and render those leases null and void. The other three, however, said, no, we're going to apply this prospectively, only in the future. If it's done similarly in the future, it would negate those leases, but we're not going to go back and apply it retrospectively. But I might point out to the listener that the curious thing that, again, few seem to have recognized, and that is that the state legislature, which is overwhelmingly democratically constituted, took a look at all the facts, all the evidence, and concluded that there were improprieties in the conveyance of those leases, and they passed legislation which asked the administration to negotiate with the leaseholders and to attempt to buy back those leases. Now, I can assure you they would have not done that for political purposes, which in essence was a repudiation of a previous Democratic governor. I'm sure they'd been very happy to stomp on the Republican administration if there were not, in fact, some improprieties in those leases. The big impropriety being simply this, that unfortunately, the previous administration had made commitments to fishermen of the area that they would not lease in that area. If it were even contemplated they would do so, they would notify the people. They neglected to do so. The people in the area said, because you've not done so, if you lease those lands, we're going to take you to court. They carried out that threat. The court ruled, as I said before. And frankly, when it comes to meeting the commitments of the previous administration, when they're two mutually exclusive ones, in other words, I cannot keep the commitment to Alaskan fishermen and at the same time keep the commitment, the leases, to the oil companies. Well, when I'm faced with that choice, I'm going to keep commitments to Alaskans first. And I'm sorry, I appreciate the good faith in which the oil companies operated, and I think it's an unfortunate thing which they were faced with. But that's the case in short order, or long order.
I'd like to throw in 2 cents on that one, because I've been involved in my up to my ears in it. You know, a lot of people, when this administration came into office, who supported the governor in his election campaign, felt very strongly that the leases in Kachemak Bay had been improperly issued, and they urged the administration to break the leases, just simply to refuse to honor them. The governor asked me for a legal opinion. I gave him one, and we felt that having issued the leases in the first place, we were obligated to go to court to defend the title of the oil companies, and we've done that. I think the oil companies are rather satisfied with that. But what we did feel was that the leases had never received any kind of proper public consideration in spite of a commitment to the residents of the area to do so. I mean, the people in Fairbanks here wouldn't feel very kindly about a major change in their lives, which was forced upon them, if they had asked for a hearing from their government, if their government simply ignored them. Now, that's what happened down in Homer. The residents wanted a hearing, they were denied it, they had leases, and it's going to change their whole way of life. So what we did do is, rather than try and break the leases, we said this: look, all private property in this state, be it your leasehold, be it something you hold in fee title, is always subject to one thing, and that's the power of the state to take the property for fair compensation for a higher public purpose. Now, the governor submitted a bill to the legislature which basically said, look, give us the power to negotiate with the oil companies to try and buy back these leases, and if that fails, to condemn it paying fair market value for them. That forced the legislature to decide whether or not taking the leases was in fact a higher public purpose. If it wasn't, it shouldn't have given the state any type of condemnation power. If it was, and the legislature decided that it was, it gave the state that power. That meant that the legislature simply decided that it wasn't worth the risk. There was too great a resource there to drill for oil. So it granted the state the power to condemn the leases, paying totally fair market value. That's the same way any citizen would deal with the state effort to take for a higher public purpose. But I want to tell you something. The bill is passed. This administration, I think, is loath to use condemnation authority. I'm not anxious to do it. I know the governor doesn't want to do it if we can avoid it under any circumstances. And I want to tell you, and we haven't talked about it much yet, we have been approached by the oil companies in Kachemak Bay, who have talked with us now about selling leases back to the state without condemning them, without breaking leases, simply looking at the situation and coming to the conclusion that all things considered, considering the residents of the area, considering the attitude of the legislature and the attitude of the administration, it's probably better to simply take their money and invest it elsewhere in the state. So we are involved in negotiations with the companies to repurchase the leases without any condemnation at all. And I personally think that would be the best way to add what, frankly, is not a very nice chapter, I think, in Alaska.
Great. Thank you. We have 2 telephone calls waiting. First is Mr. William Windsor, with a telephone call concerning the Hall Road. Mr. Windsor?
Yes, I would like to ask Governor Hammond how the state can legally close the Hall Road to the general public when the general public has already contributed a large amount of cash for the Hall Road and the bridge, and will, of course, pay for the balance of the Hall Road through higher prices on gas and oil in the future.
Well, I'm going to lob that to Ab for the legal aspects of that question. I might point out that, unfortunately, the taxpayers are not currently paying for the transportation costs for ferries, highways, and or airfields. Rather, we're subsidizing them from other sources than direct tax monies to the tune of some, I believe, $40 million. Now, to add to that subsidy and to further place us behind the power curve and obligate even greater expenditures without revenues coming in to meet those expenditures, I think it would be imprudent at this stage in time. So far as the legal aspects and what the state can and should and must do in regard to that road, I would ask Ab to respond to the...
Well, the question is, how can the state close the Hall Road? The answer is it can't.
And didn't.
And that nobody's stated that we will. I think there's been some misinterpretation of what the governor said about the Hall Road. The governor has stated that we are keeping the Hall Road closed now until plans are made for its eventual use. And the Department of Law had ruled and given the governor an opinion prior to his statement to the effect that the Hall Road cannot be closed on a long-term basis, but it can be closed on a temporary basis until plans are made for its use. Now, those plans are twofold. They're, first of all, immediate plans, like where do you put trooper stations and, you know, how are you going to get fuel for people who travel on the highway. If we let people travel on the highway tomorrow, unlimited public use, the state would bear an enormous liability for that, because our Supreme Court has ruled that once the state takes over maintenance of highways, it must do so reasonably. So if somebody got hurt on the highways and the state troopers weren't there to help, we'd get sued and you'd pay for it. The second kind of planning is long-range planning. For instance, the residents of that area don't want the Hall Road used. Well, if we legally have to open it to public use, then how can the road be used best to ensure that it has a minimum impact on those people's lives? I mean, I think that's only fair. And, you know, what do we want the Arctic to develop into? What kinds of uses do we want for the road? Those are long-term plans. We couldn't open the road tomorrow if we wanted to. And I think what the governor has said is that we're going to keep it closed except to industrial and commercial use until we've got these plans worked out, which is perfectly lawful. But eventually, the road must be open to the public. And I think there's no question about that. And the governor has stated it, and that's what the law is.
Okay, thank you, Av. We have another
thank
phone call.
Much.
Excuse me, Mr. Windsor. We have a phone call from Mr. Ray Krieg. Are you there, Mr. Krieg?
Yes, sir, Governor. I came in a little late, and if you've covered this subject already, I apologize in advance, but it concerns your proposed gross severance tax on the mining industry. And I was interested in knowing the rationale or your objectives behind proposing this. The industry seems to be up in arms, saying that it places Alaska in a very uncompetitive position with other areas for attracting exploration money. And it would seem that there may be some credit to what they say on that, since there appears to be only one or two active hard rock mines in the state now.
Well, I'm not sure exactly what tax proposal you're talking about. The latest tax proposals discussed that I'm aware of were those that had been discussed with members and representatives of the mining industry in Juneau with Commissioner of Revenue Sterling Gallagher, in which to my understanding, by and large, were supported by members of the industry. They related to, as I understand it, again, a profitabilities concept, which when one made more money, he paid more taxes and that type of thing. Now, my concerns are in regard to any resource development that they make some contribution to the state coffers above and beyond the cost of maintaining that operation. And the mining taxes have been very modest, and certainly the mining industry, which is hanging by its fingernails to begin with, cannot absorb undue additional costs. But I think we have to take a look at the possibility that there may be substantial mineral development here in the state of Alaska at some future date, perhaps by foreign entities. And in order to accommodate the mom and pop operation, under existing law, we would permit monstrous international corporate entities to escape virtually unscathed, pay no taxes at all. I think we have to make some sort of sliding scale adjustment which precludes that from occurring. I don't know whether Guy Martin has any comments in that regard. Tony?
And I think it would be fair to state that rather than than the miners having supported it. They accepted the logic reluctantly. I don't think anybody enthusiastically supports a tax on their own entity, but they did accept the logic, and I think the point you made is very good, that we modified the proposals to allow for the mom and pop, as you say, on the profitability basis.
I see. Well, could I ask, is the tax going to be based only on active production, or will it be taxing exploration efforts also? It would seem that that would be counterproductive to have any tax on exploration efforts.
Well, I would agree with you, but I'll convey the question to Guy Martin.
One of the things that I think, I don't know where you're getting all of your information, but let me say that the question is clearly not closed at this time. When I first joined the governor's cabinet, there was a proposal that was pretty firm. I recall, I think, recommending against it at some point along the way, along with probably Tony, and we withdrew the proposal. I think at the present time it's safe to say that the whole issue is under discussion, and the kinds of things that you're suggesting are part of that discussion. Now, as far as I'm concerned, and I think as far as the governor's concerned, anything that would actually tax exploration is not going to be a part of any tax package that we propose, and we also intend very much that it be a tax which is progressive in the sense of getting the big guys the hardest. The real problem, I think, is that we don't want to build into our mining development in this state a subsidy which starts from day one by not taxing at a rate that might be expected later. If you'll remember, this is exactly what the issue is now with the oil industry. What we did is that we taxed at a certain level before we knew that we had a great bonanza at Prudhoe Bay, and now we're going back and attempting to tax at still a higher level now that we know we have an area with, quote, superior profitability. And we're concerned that if we don't approach taxation of mining now, before the fact at a fair level, we'll be up against the same thing at a time when it'll cripple an already existing industry.
One of the things to answer Mr. Craig's question, I think a basic question is, are we going after exploration as opposed to the actual development of it? And I think the answer, basically, your question is no, because it's a revenue, it's meant to be a revenue in raising measure, and you don't raise money by just requiring licenses for exploration. Where you raise money is once the development is there and the production's there, you then tax it. And I think basically that was the thrust of his question.
I see. Okay, then, may I ask one other thing about the disposition of the tax monies? Will these be going into the permanent fund, or will they be a general revenue item?
Well, under law, they would up to 25% of them would go into the permanent fund.
Only leases, royalties, and so forth. Severance taxes would not be obligated to go into the fund. They could be by legislative fiat going portions of them into the fund.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Craig.
Thank you.
We have another telephone call. Mr. Monty Shade, are you there?
Yes, I am. Governor Hammond, there are a few persons desiring more land for the private sector. Wouldn't high-priced, short-term leases issued by the state result in greater productivity of the land? And also, would this not aid our many young people who will never own property due to speculation by persons who never use their land?
I'm going to defer that to Guy Martin. Guy?
Governor, we've walked through that question a lot of times. Once you accept the idea that we've got to make more land available and we've got to do it productively, as this gentleman suggests, couldn't you do it through leasing? I initially agreed almost wholeheartedly with the approach that he's suggesting. I've turned around a little bit on it now into thinking that we should make a decision on land commitment, and when we make it, we should actually convey the land. Now, that may fly in the face of at least some liberal thought, but my feeling is that the administrative duties and the cost to the state that go with leases are so great, and the problems that we've seen in the cases of things like the Teamsters lease and others are so great, that I think that we're better off in the long run not to ignore leasing programs, but to basically go toward programs where once we dispose of land, we actually give title to people. So I think that we could get at the same thing he wants to get at by giving title, but possibly limiting that title in some way, like, for instance, giving agricultural title, giving development title, giving a title which carries with it some obligations rather than simply the ability to hold the land and speculate.
Well, could I add one thing to that? You know, that has a lot of merit, right? I would think that in order to do that, to give fee, you would have to set up a payment program, because otherwise people couldn't afford to make the one lump, and banks won't lend the money on raw land.
Absolutely. Okay. And you're going to have to do it so that people can buy it at a reasonable cost, but convey the title.
Reasonable payments over a period
of
time.
That's right.
I think your question.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Shade. We're going to stay on the air until 10 o'clock. The governor just asked if he could handle that, and he said yes. We have a lot of questions stacked up, so I'm just going to...
Thank you. Know about those old folks over there.
Okay, I've got two questions here that seem to be almost the same, so let me read both of them. They were both called in, and then I will see who wants to answer them. The first viewer says land leased from the state was reappraised and payment was increased 800%. Who can this person and others leasing state land talk to about this? The next question was viewer said her payment on land leased from the Division of Land increased from $880 to $6,540 per year. Who can she see about this?
Guy Martin, I'm going to convey that to him. It's in his shop.
Thank you, Governor. This is an issue which, as you know, is a very difficult one now, and we're spending a great deal of time on it. Let me explain the situation very briefly. When your administration came into office, one of the things that we found, that we believed, was that land held under state leases had not been reappraised according to law. And as harsh as it was in terms of some of the increases, we simply had to fulfill the law, reappraise those leases according to the standards that had been set, and to impose the subsequent increases on people. The increases were basically due to two factors, as we saw it. One was a lot of speculation in land in Alaska, and that was in turn based on the fact that we had the inflation that was going on associated with the pipeline. Now, the problem was that those leases increases hit people very hard all at one time. We were not permitted under the law to try to build those in on a step-by-step basis. What we're going to do is very shortly have the governor, I think, appoint, this is at his request earlier in the year, appoint a panel of people, probably no more than 8 or 10 citizens, similar to the malpractice board that was used by Commissioner Motley, but probably smaller, made up, not in this case of a terribly wide spectrum, but of people from the banking community, the real estate community, the legal community, with specific expertise in this subject, to address that question and probably offer to put legislation before the next legislature to ease that burden. It may not mean that the lease rates for these people will go down, because quite frankly, those may be fair rates. But what we can do is get some relief for the immediate burden of those increases and actually ask the legislature to make the decision if they want to lower the rates. But the fact is, land in Alaska is darn expensive now, and the rates are going to be high.
The short answer to that really is that the rates have increased because the laws on the books compel that type of reevaluation, reassessment that escalated them.
Absolutely.
Guy, that really characterizes the problem that was brought out by the prior question, where the listener suggested that rather than sell the land, we lease it. The problems, as you have just reiterated, are somewhat monumental in trying to establish what a fair rental rate is. When you stop and think about it, I think many people would conclude that it's really not a function of government to act as a landlord, but try to dispose some of the land and put it in private ownership. And certainly the best way of doing that is to sell it.
I agree. I think that one of the issues we're going to have to face very soon in this state is what kind of a return the state should get from all of its resources, and if there are areas that we want to subsidize. The mining tax raised that question, the lease rates for land raised that question, so do others. And it's really going to be a fair return question whether or not we subsidize certain transactions to the benefit of people who participate in them, or whether or not we spread the burden or gain the benefits for all the people of the state.
Great, thank you, gentlemen. Say, at the risk of maybe having to leave Alaska in a hurry tomorrow, I might even suggest that some of our cabinet members hold their answers down a bit, Governor. We have an awful lot of questions, and we'd like for people to be able to get their answers. Mr. Martin,
did you say we're leaving
tomorrow? We have about another 26 or 27 minutes. And Mr. Martin, another question for you. What is the status of the state's experimental salmon farm?
I get to defer very briefly. I think that's probably in Jim Brooks' department, but I can tell you that there are at least two major experiments underway now to construct hatcheries. I think the governor's much more expert than I am on that.
I'd like to make a little comment on that. The salmon rehabilitation program and enhancement program got off the ground, but just barely, some few years ago. And with some unhappy circumstances, some, I think, lack of enthusiasm or lack of belief that it would fly. Since that time, I've been very heartened by what's happened, both in the attitudes of those involved in the program and some of the results of the initial phases of that program. I can tell you they've had some very favorable returns from such experiments as the Auk Creek one down in Juneau. I understand the gravel incubator saltwater rearing pen in Halibut Cove suddenly took fire and returned a substantial increased run over what they even anticipated in their wildest hopes would be the survival of those salmon that went to sea. So I think there's some signs on the horizon that give indication that we're going to have some good results from that, but they're a long time. It's a long-term program. We have a long way to go.
Thank you, Governor.
It might be a good opportunity, Governor, to put in at least a brief plug for the bond issue, which is up before the people this time on the fisheries rehabilitation. It is an administration bond issue, and it's the first time I think the government has really made a move to try and restore what's obviously an almost destroyed resource. And I realize that fishing isn't critical in Fairbanks, but if we're ever going to get it back, it needs to pass.
Mr. Bob Perkins, you're on Town Forum.
Yes, sir. Good evening, Governor. My case is on, I was just reading this title, 38 Public Lands, and I wanted to know about a residency. You know, I retired from the military over a year and a half, and I came here and I got a job. So I worked on the pipeline, and I found out that I couldn't go back to work on the pipe, particularly because I didn't have a residency card. So I was wondering, and then I went and took an application out and I filled it out. So they almost passed it. I had to fill out a lot of papers, and it said, five, you show by all intending circumstances that this intent is to make Alaska's permanent residence. So I couldn't exactly show that by being retired because I hadn't been here long enough. So I was wondering, what's your opinion on that? What do I have to do?
Governor Hammond, may we kill two questions with one answer here? The next one in my hand says, what is your opinion of the Alaska Hire Law?
Well, the intent of the Alaska Hire Law certainly is a credible and appropriate one, and I think it's had some successes, some failures, or problems with it. We think that it's more appropriate that structured into the contracts of the various unions and contractors there be a provision for Alaska Hire rather than attempting to impose through some sort of state statute. However, the law is on the books and it's being implemented to the best extent possible. The acquisition of the resident hire card or the residency card that the listener talked about, my understanding is all is required is 1 year's residency within the state. I don't know if I'd bounce that off. We don't have the Commissioner of Labor with us,
it's
but
correct. The law requires 1 year's residency within the state. I should say, just as a matter of interest, the local hire law was never really enforced. It was never really enforced because everybody believed that it was totally unconstitutional, and the moment you enforced it, somebody would take it into court, and of course the thing would get thrown out. After this administration came in, the attitude was, well, if the law's worth anything, you ought to enforce it, and if not, forget it. So we started to enforce it. Sure enough, we got a lawsuit, and lo and behold, we won. So local hire, right now at least, has been adjudged constitutional. It's going up to the Supreme Court.
Okay, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Mr. John Williams, good evening.
Yes, I'd like to ask the governor or someone on his panel a question concerning the power production in the state. Why can't the state take some of the oil revenue money or some of the other money that we have coming in and go in and build a dad burn dam or something that would increase power production in the state rather than depend strictly on oil and gas and coal-fired turbines and stuff like this, and build a dam or something to produce power and sell it to the utility company so that the people in the state of Alaska doesn't have to pay the high prices for electricity?
Well, of course, it would be possible if the revenues were sufficient to construct such a dam, and if the public, majority of the public, wished to do so, and that the appropriate legislation were passed to accomplish that objective. However, we have by no means that amount of revenue available to us at the moment, and I am, of course, very much skeptical of state or any governmental involvement in programs of that nature that I think are more appropriately accomplished by private industry. However, there are means of prospectively financing some hydroelectric projects which are being explored, and as the individual case proves its merit, they'll probably be implemented at some future date.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Governor. Well, we'll move right along and change the situation a little bit. I think maybe this would be for Mr. Gross, and maybe not. Since correctional facilities in Fairbanks are overcrowded, why doesn't the state consider using the now-abandoned missile site on Donnelly Dome?
You're suggesting we tie the prisoners to the missiles?
Outer space, outer government.
How about that, too?
I'm not really sure of that. Andy, do you know about that?
No, I'm not that familiar with the property.
I'm not familiar with the property either. Yeah. I should say that the Division of Corrections is not in the Department of Law, it's in the Division of Health and Social Services.
Yeah, the immediate problem is getting personnel to work up there. In a correctional institution, you need a multitude of personnel to run it. I would think that if the facility was outside of Fairbanks very far, it'd be very expensive to run. I think you're also looking at substantial renovations of the facility to put it into a condition that would be adaptable to the housing of prisoners.
The courts have ruled, you know, that you have to have certain basic criteria for the places where you keep prisoners. So it isn't, you know, you can't just find any old place.
Olga Baker of 1014 Pedro Street would like to know, why don't we have a mandatory auto insurance law to protect people who are hit by uninsured motorists, one which would prohibit issuing a driver's license without insurance?
Tony, that's in your shop, the insurance.
It's more appropriate than Av's shop. It was a no. It falls into the some of that. I'm trying to, I guess, pitch the question, Av. Is it tied to no-fault insurance also? Would you tie it to that or not?
Well, of course, the no-fault theory is that you insure yourself rather than somebody else insure you. The theory that's been prevalent in this state and most states is, for one reason or another, you get one free bite. You get to hit somebody, and then you got to get insurance before you can get your license back. Some states have mandatory insurance, but the legislature in Alaska simply never adopted it. I can't tell you why.
Has it become an administrative nightmare in issuing licenses, Dick? To show proof of insurance?
The way it is now? Yeah. Well, it takes a certain amount of administration, and it takes hearing officers, and when they do have an accident, for the people that object to it, but it's become easier with our ability increased to keep computer records and to update our records. But like he says, they have one accident, and then at that time they have to show financial responsibility either by putting up a bond or by becoming insured.
I should say that it's not all that easy, because in Massachusetts or places where they do have mandatory insurance, they still have a number of drivers who don't have insurance. They simply don't bother to get licenses. They just drive without licenses.
When they catch them, it's a double whammy.
Yeah.
Lucille Truesdale has a question for the governor. Ms. Truesdale?
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Good evening, Governor. I'd like to do a little follow-up on the question that was asked about residency cards. I work for Alyeska as site counselor for the Native people and been on the line for over a year. And I have the question asked of me every day. I have people coming in asking for state applications for residency cards. And I think the general attorney was saying that you're eligible if you've been residing in Alaska for a year. Does that go same for the people that are working on the pipeline in the camps? Living in the camps.
Well, if you've been a resident of Alaska for a year, that means if you've been physically present for a year and you've intended to make Alaska your home. If you meet those criteria, you qualify, as I remember.
I think How do you determine that when the people that are, or the employees working at the camps, when they're paying Alaska state tax?
Well, that would certainly indicate that they plan to make Alaska their home.
I would think so too, but they seem to run into problems when they go down to the state building giving them their application and they're turned down because, you know, they're living or residing at the camp where that is the location of their employment.
I don't know the individual problems you're talking about, but if you have specific individual problems, either bring them into my office or bring them into the Department of Labor office, which is where they should be handled.
Is that to you, General Attorney? What is?
Yes, to Mr. Gross's office or the Office of Attorney General, and I would assume Fairbanks or any of the other places, right, Mr. Gross? Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Zell. We're not going to get to all of our questions. There's no doubt about that, and I just asked the governor if it was okay to announce that anyone having questions unanswered yet could write his office or write the commissioner that might be the appropriate one in the case. Is that all right, Governor Hammond?
Yes, please.
Write his office.
Write the governor's office. We're certainly not going to get all of them. I guess that yes, means that this is a rather successful situation here. Several questions, maybe to change around just a little bit. This is a very simple one. Why was the university budget cut? And I didn't ask that.
Well, the university budget, unfortunately, drew a veto in part because, again, I'll go back to the fact that we're simply not acquiring enough money to fund state government from current ongoing revenues. We're faced with a rather tough fiscal situation. We're borrowing, again, $200-some million a year from future revenues. We're expending something like $750 per year, $1,750 a year per capita, earning only about $1,250 per year per capita. Now, while that's better than it was when this administration took over, we're still falling far behind earning enough per capita to fund unlimitedly all the service requests that come before us. Now, I had, in the interest of, I think, sound and sensible fiscal constraint, announced that we could not absorb more than the $700 million budget this year. The legislature chose to pass a budget which exceeded that by about $17 million. Now, in attempting to determine where and how to cut that budget, we put out certain criteria and we impacted friend and foe alike. It wasn't that we focused in on this individual's request or that one's. We simply applied certain criteria. We, in regard to the university cut, left the determination of where the cuts be applied up to the Board of Regents. But unfortunately, the $17 million we had to take out of the budget hurt numbers of people. I was not happy to be faced with that obligation to cut the budget, but that is why we were compelled to get into virtually all programs and reduce them somewhat.
Governor, there's another way to look at it, too. It wasn't you. The viewer put it in a negative context. Actually, it wasn't a matter of cutting the university's budget. It was limiting it to a growth of somewhere around 15%, as opposed to the growth of other state agencies of being somewhere in the vicinity of 11 to 12%.
Governor Hammond, students living less than 1.5 miles from schools are not eligible for busing unless the route is hazardous. Are there possible exceptions for very small children? Or is there any appeal process for parents when the local school board declares the route not hazardous?
Well, there certainly, I would assume, to be an appeal process to that local school board, which, if not remedied or recognized, I suppose could be remedied at the ballot box the next election. But I would hope that numbers of people who are of a view that such a thing should be accomplished would convey their opinions to the school board.
Now, here's another compliment. You want to hear a compliment for exchange? Chuck Kime would like to compliment the governor and his cabinet for this pioneering activity, which, if continued as communication systems progress in the state, can only help us to think together so we can work together for the good of the entire state. I think you know Chuck,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, thank you, Chuck. Appreciate that.
Governor Hammond, what do you think of mandatory automobile inspection?
Well, that's in Dick Burton's shop. I don't like anything mandatory, to tell you the truth. I'd get rid of everything that was marked mandatory if I could do it. There are some obligations related to federal highway funding, which brought forth the whole idea of auto inspection. I would bounce that off of Dick Burton. I think he's much more familiar with that issue, or whomever would like to address that.
Well, Governor, I think about it pretty much the same way you do. That's why we discussed it jointly and decided to scrap the program after we had built one around the federal mandates last year. If that's what they're referring to. Of course, there's two sides to everything. If everybody would do everything voluntarily, we wouldn't need any laws. But for the protection of the majority of the people on the road, there are certain vehicles, and whether we can draw a line whether it's a certain age of vehicle or something, we're addressing that now, that I think that some of them are going to have to be inspected. And what we're going to try to do is to build up a better highway patrol highway safety program within the state troopers to make spot random inspections of those vehicles which need it. That way you won't necessarily put people with the obviously newer vehicles through something that's somewhat burdensome to them.
Thought occurs to me in that regard, and I'd like to bounce this off of him. rather than obligating mandatory vehicle inspection, what if you appended an additional penalty to those who used a vehicle which was not safe to begin with?
I mean, I set up an inspection system to which people could voluntarily submit, but if you didn't and you got in an accident with an old clunker, you got in worse shape. Yeah, I think you could probably do that.
The only problem with that is there's plenty of regulations and laws on the books now about operating unsafe equipment, but for somebody who's driving a piece of equipment that could possibly go out and have an accident and cause a fatality, if we do cite them, usually it ends up with about a $10 fine. Not much of an incentive.
It costs you several thousand dollars to collect a $10 fine.
We have about 7 minutes left. Three or four questions about money here. How much of the $900 million from the oil lease sale is left, Governor?
Well, it's all been obligated, and it has been for some time. I can't tell you exactly, identify specific dollars that are left. Tony, perhaps, I don't know whether you're, or Andy, familiar with the actual remnants of the $900 million remain in the state coffers, but I can tell you it's all been programmed and had been programmed before this administration for all intents and purposes.
Tony? One of you separated out as an entity, the $900 million. Andy and I were just discussing it, being members of the bond committee. I think March of last year saw the pure $900 million,
'76. We tried to compute when the last of the $900 million would go, and it was somewhere in March of this year for those that are interested. We are now operating on monies we are borrowing from future royalties and severance taxes, as Governor, you have indicated in responding to a number of other questions.
Mr. Martin, someone wants to ask you maybe a little more difficult question here. It says, there is a serious morale problem in the State Geological Survey Office. Does the administration have any plans to deal with this?
Well, I can't be aware of exactly what the caller is talking about, or the writer's asking about. I think that we've undertaken some very meaningful changes in the Geological Survey in the last year or so, basically intended to make the work of the survey far more relevant to future state decision making. My own feeling coming in, and this has been echoed by many others, is the survey was doing some work which, although was of a very high professional quality, was useful only in the distant future and would not help us make state land selections, make decisions on lease sales, make decisions on mineral commitments. And we've endeavored to make some changes to make their work more relevant. And that, in some cases, has engendered some problems. But quite frankly, no specific problems have been brought to my attention. And our director of the Geological Survey, Ross Schaff, has indicated that he's fairly pleased with the way the program's going now.
Thank you, Guy. Gas and oil construction will cause loss of archaeological and historical material. Are there any plans to expand the state archaeological situation? Presently, just one position?
I'd like to answer that if I could. It's in the Division of Parks in the Department of Natural Resources. I'd like to do that very much. We're proposing to do it in next year's budget. I think it's tremendously important, particularly as we look to some of these big construction projects.
Governor, has any consideration been given to the amalgamation of Department of Fish and Game, Department of Environmental Conservation, and Department of Natural Resources?
No, not to my knowledge, certainly not by this administration. Some 20 years ago, there was talk of having one monstrous agency in which there were generalists who performed virtually every function imaginable. It looked very good on paper, but realistically, I think it fell apart upon examination. There has been more effort and recommendation that the Department of Fish and Game be split into a fish and department and a game department. But I think I am not favorably disposed toward that. I think to do such a thing as suggests there would remove even more remotely from local input, local control, local management decisions the fish and game programs, and I think it would be moving in the wrong direction.
Is the Department of Revenue interested in collecting state income tax from defense contractors and prosecuting those contractors not withholding the tax? A viewer reported violations last year and hasn't heard what happened.
Well, I can't imagine that my Commissioner of Revenue would not have responded post haste to that if it were conveyed to him. But I assure you, he becomes quite excited if there's a possibility of a dollar escaping from his purview. But I would hope that the viewer would convey to me directly that particular circumstance, and I can assure you that we'll sit down together and find out what happened on that.
I'm moving a little fast, but we have about 3 minutes left and a lot of questions. Why can't we use some of our state revenues to fund housing programs rather than depend on national loaning institutions?
Well, again, we don't have the revenues.
Well, that's a simple answer, and I ask for short answers, and that's what I got.
True at the moment.
The new Shaw Creek to Richardson Roadhouse Road is very rough. Is the road finished, or is it just a rough job?
Governor, what I think they've done is they put on that a seal coat, anticipating that it is going to settle over the next couple of years. I think probably 2 years from now you'll see the road resurfaced. It's been planned that way to try to avoid some of the problems they've had in the past.
Thank you. Why were residents of Badger Road not notified of the ABC hearing for a new bar in the neighborhood? Because they weren't notified, can anything be done now that a license has been issued?
Perhaps the Attorney General has some knowledge of that particular instance. I'm not aware of the particulars, but my understanding requires that the local government entity reflect on whether or not licenses be issued. And I would assume they would have given notification. Lee or Av, do you have any?
We only have about 1 minute left.
I'm not aware of the case. Write me a letter, tell me the instances, and I'll check into it.
You know, our time's winding down. And I'm very sorry we didn't get to all of the questions. The governor and his cabinet, I'm sure, will be very happy to answer the questions if you write in. And before we wind it up, Governor Hamlin, do you have anything you'd like to say to the people of Fairbanks in the next 30 seconds or so?
Well, I think I've probably said too much already, but I again want to thank you for your hospitality and by and large, the warm and friendly reception we've had. We've had some spirited discussions. I think it's been a very healthy exercise, laid a lot of things up on the table, provided you with some moving targets, and we've appreciated some of the shots taken and some of the compliments conveyed, and I want to thank you again.
We have 1 minute left, and I think it's time for us to thank all of you folks, Governor Hammond, Commissioner Mueller, Commissioner Martin, Commissioner McInerney, Attorney General Avram Gross, I'm sorry, Commissioner Richard Burton, Commissioner Andy Warwick, and Commissioner L.A. Tony Motley. And
I'd say one thing, that we probably would have had time to finish all the questions had we not had the lawyers on our staff that deliver such wordy answers to the questions.
You can always tell the people that are leaving the administration, they put in these snide comments.
Well, I think it's great that you gave the citizens in the area an opportunity to talk to you, to all of you, and we thank all of the citizens also who participated tonight for caring about their state government. Any last minute? We got 15 seconds. Okay. Thank you very much for tuning in to Town Forum, and it does sound as if it's been a successful evening, and we'll try to do it again. Good night.
This special presentation of Town Forum has been a joint production of KUAC and KUAC-TV. Funds for this program were partially provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
This is KUAC Fairbanks. The time is 10 p.m. I'm Mike Wellings reporting.